Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with all of you. Many of you who know me in my hat as executive director of the and founder of the Military Advisory Board at CNA, which since 2007 has been a voice on climate change and national security. And I'm wearing here in a new hat today, although I'm still very passionate about that work, but I am my third day into a new position as the CEO and president of the Consortium for Ocean Leadership. So I am here in my oceans hat today. And Ocean Leadership is members are the 100 major ocean science research organizations in the United States, from the Woods Hole Oceanographic to Scripps and many more in between, and the Aquaria. It is a great resource for the United States in terms of ocean science, research, and education. And if, as Monica said, National Geographic is all about the power of doing, ocean leadership is all about the power of the oceans. Science, sustainability, security, and stability. And this is nowhere more evident than how I'm going to try to thread the oceans and security discussion for you today, because I firmly believe that U.S. global leadership depends on our ocean leadership. And I'm going to talk with you today for a couple minutes about four ways in which I think our oceans and protecting that beauty and bounty that we saw here in this wonderful National Geographic video connect our oceans and security. So let's talk first about the Arctic. No region of the planet is changing more rapidly than the Arctic today. Some say it's analogous to the opening of the Wild West, a whole new region being born. And as ice cover decreases in the Arctic, climate change will accelerate and ocean warming will accelerate, and we'll likely see these effects in sea level rise, release of methane gas that contributes to warming climate, loss of habitat, and livelihoods in the Arctic, as many of you probably saw today just on the front page of the Washington Post, changes in the very lifestyle and inability of Native Alaskans to maintain their lifestyle. It's also a security challenge. Of course, the U.S. has been operating in that region for a while, but the key players in the Arctic are, of course, U.S., Canada, Russia, Norway, Greenland through Denmark, and then there are several other nations, all of which together comprise the Arctic Council. This year, the U.S. Chairs the Arctic Council and is poised now to show some strong leadership in terms of advancing security and sustainability in this critical region. And at the same time, our ability to maintain that security and that stability and develop an Arctic future that is safe for the coming both exploration and exploitation of its vast resources, from fishing to energy to mining, depends critically on our understanding better how the Arctic is changing. And that's why the science that we need to advance now on the circulation of the Arctic, on ocean ice interactions, and on real-time observations are all really critical. The ocean plays an important role in the formation of sea ice, and its melting is a crucial element in quantifying and projecting the future rates of melting. So we need to establish a comprehensive observing system in the Arctic to monitor the extent of sea ice, the thickness of the sea ice, and the structure and properties of the water column immediately between it. Some of that work is underway, but there's a lot more that we need to understand. Second is rising sea levels, not only in the Arctic, but globally. Sea level rise will not only affect shoreline erosion and inundate low-lying islands, but it will also exacerbate the risks of storm surge, Now we've seen this from everything from Superstorm Sandy to devastating tsunamis and floods. A 1-in-100-year flooding event would occur annually with just a 0.5-meter sea level rise in mean sea level in many regions. And that's going to have at least three important impacts: direct displacement of millions of people from such areas as Bangladesh, the Mekong, perhaps even in the Nile. Where will they go? There's a Bangladeshi general I've worked with who's very articulate and can tell the story in deep detail about the low-lying regions of Bangladesh, which is indeed much of the country, which sits just a few feet above sea level and is very densely populated with many people who live in very minimal conditions already and who are seeing their livelihoods almost wash away and now having a very difficult time finding higher ground. Much of the higher ground is in India, which has built a fence to keep economic and ultimately climate refugees from crossing over to safety. So that is that's a disaster waiting to happen. Second, the impact on lowered food supplies produced by some of those same deltas, flooding and saltwater infiltration into aquifers. Third, major cities are at risk from sea level rise. There's New York, Miami, LA, Miami in particular, all here in the U.S., but also very densely populated cities in Asia, Jakarta, Dhaka, Mumbai, Shanghai, Tokyo, all at risk from a combined sea level rise and storm surge. 1 billion people living in urban slums with little resilience. So monitoring sea level requires an expanded system of advanced water level measurements and sustained satellite measurements as well. And so that's another major challenge of oceans and security. Third is the changes in ocean food supplies. You know, our oceans serve as the primary source of protein now for millions of people around the world. Billions of people actually depending on the oceans. And warming oceans are moving fish species toward the poles, away from Africa and Asia, where the largest population growth and higher demand for food is indeed happening. And we already see an increase in piracy in the Horn of Africa because of the loss of fisheries and disputes also with Chinese fisheries. Warmer temperatures are also leading to coral bleaching, and changes happening around the planet. And then there is the big challenge of ocean acidification, already affecting the pH of the planet, of the oceans, affecting the food building blocks, the plankton and crustaceans that are the building blocks of the entire seafood chain, and could really devastate a number of coral reefs within decades. The acidity of the oceans has increased by 30%. Since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Combined with that is biodiversity loss. Ocean ecosystems have been subject to decades of intense fishing, urban and agricultural runoff, and the loss and degradation of estuaries and wetlands, invasive species from a variety of sources, and has resulted in degraded ocean ecosystems. And then finally, fourth is oceans as the source of a majority of our weather. Let's talk about the weather. That's all we've been doing here this winter in Washington in the Northeast, talking about the polar vortex that's made our winter so complicated. But a lot of that derives from the air-sea interactions and what's happening in the warming ocean, the shifting not only of the jet stream, but El Nino, La Nina, the Atlantic thermohaline circulation, and things that Paul could tell us about in much greater detail than I will attempt to today. But needless to say, we need to invest in the scientific observations if we're going to be able to more accurately predict the future conditions of the ocean that will impact both regional and climate and weather, enable us to build a more resilient society as our weather and climate system are changing more rapidly. So all this comes down to the fact that the United States, here we are, we sit in this unique position, and our security, our stability, our global leadership depend very mightily on the fact that we are a landmass positioned between the two mighty Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. From forward presence to freedom of navigation, it all depends on being able to preserve the sanctity and security of our ocean heritage and maintain this even as the oceans around us are indeed changing. Thank you very much.